Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's space. I can see your speaker is here. I'm going to bring him up. I hope everybody's Friday is going on well. I'm going to be also waiting for Matt to come in. Caroline of Sanchi. Oh, yeah, there you go. Yes, it's happening. It's happening today. Glad to be back. It's been a while. Missed you all.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me, Matt?
Loud and clear. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Catalan, can you hear?
Yes. Happy Friday. I'm glad to be here. Hope that you can hear me fine.
I can hear you pretty well, but a little bit louder. I just want to make sure also I'm pronouncing your name right. Please let me know how I can pronounce your name.
Yeah, it's Catalan. Catalan, it's like that.
Cool. Matt, are you there? Do you want to kick us off?
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah. So happy Friday, everyone. Glad that you all could be here to speak with Madonna and myself and Catalin, who just released a new book about Android development with Jetpack and Kotlin. And we're just going to go over some of what the book covers today and just talk about some Android topics and hear from Catalin on some of his motivations behind the book and what it covers. So glad you can all be here. And we can just jump right into it if everyone's ready.
I'm ready. Always ready.
All right. So yeah, Catalin, do you want to just give us a quick introduction to yourself and then we can move on to talking about the book?
Yeah, sure. That's good. So first of all, I'm really glad to be here. I've been, you know, kind of trying to participate on your Hangouts for a long time now, and I'm really glad to be part of one. That you're doing a great job and great service to the community. In terms of me, I think that many people are listening right now. They kind of, you know, we have interacted until now, but just as a short description, I've been doing Android for quite some time now, I think over 6 years, and professionally also trying to, you know, work on pretty much big applications and trying to also get involved into the community. And basically just to, you know, to give back to the community, because at least from my perspective, I didn't really have mentors. So everything that I know and that I learned is to the awesome community of Android. And I really want to thank everyone for that.
Awesome. So moving on into the book. So it seems like you maybe were motivated to write this for the community. And I'm wondering, how did you get started into writing a book? It seems like a pretty daunting task to take on.
This is actually a funny story, because I've noticed Thomas, that I'm sure that most of you have heard of Thomas and his book on Jetpack Compose. I noticed his journey of writing a book. He kind of, you know, shared a lot of updates during his posts, and at some point there was an interaction between him, I think, and Pact account on Twitter, and I just commented like, you know, I wish I would be able to write a book. And the next day, I actually got approached by the people at Pact, and they kind of came up with this idea, which was basically community driven, of, you know, creating a book that kind of tackles and covers a lot of the technologies and trends in the Android development ecosystem. And at that point, I was hooked, because, you know, I always wanted to write a book, and I just said yes, and I guess here we are. And I do agree that it's, you know, this kind of thing of writing a book is daunting. I expected it to be quite difficult and quite time-consuming. And in the end, it turned out that it was even more time-consuming than I expected it to be. However, it's a very rewarding process. And, you know, going back to what you mentioned in terms of, you know, coming back to the community, I think there's no better way of doing that, you know, other than a fully fledged book on Android. And what I was able to incorporate in the book is basically what I was able to learn across the years and kind of try to share that with everyone.
That's awesome. So you are no stranger to putting together like a curriculum of content, right? Like, I think you've done some stuff with Udemy as well.
Yeah, actually, I've been writing some small blog posts for some time. I've been trying to, add some small contributions on GitHub and different libraries and different samples, things I was able to, learn and I wanted to share with everyone. Yeah, I think that the most interesting part was when I was able to, develop a few courses on Udemy, and one of them in particular, the one on Compose, it has taken off a bit. I would say it was a big success in terms, for my standard at least, having a few thousand students and having the ability of, interacting with them and, trying to tailor the content on their needs and on their requirements. But, from the video format to actually and having some maybe some blog posts to actually going into writing a book that has, almost 500 pages, it was quite a challenge. And it kind of required a paradigm shift, in terms of how we are going to organize so much content. But yeah, I think in the end, it turned out quite well.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for that introduction to all your stuff. We'll dive into some more details in a second, but I just want to say thanks for everyone who showed up today. If you have any questions for anyone up here speaking, but especially Catalin, please request to speak, and Madonna or I will get you up here. And if you have questions but don't want to come up and speak today, just send either Madonna or myself a message and we can ask for you. But yeah, thanks again for being here. And Madonna, do you want to start us off with any questions about the book or any other content that Catalin is putting out?
Yes. I think my first question is to you, Catalin, and it's going to be just based on your book. And I think you've touched on this, which you said it was about the community and motivation, but I just want to hear from you. Like, I just want to hear your breakdown. If you have a full-time job, how long did it take you to complete the entire book? Because I feel like that for many people, or for me, for instance, is that balancing when you have a full-time job. How do you balance it so well that you finish a book within a certain timeline?
Yeah, this is thank you, Madonna. This is a great question because when we kind of kick started this project of writing a book, we had some plans, we had some estimations in place. And at that time, what was pretty much clear to me was that, I need to set up a schedule. I need to, set aside at least 1 hour or 2 hours every day so I can, write and kind of also do research and do all these kind of things which are related to writing a chapter and the entire book itself. And initially, to be honest, I was expecting this to be done in maybe 6 months. In the end, it turned out that, the writing process was about 6 months. However, after that was done, there was a lot of, back and forth of trying to improve the content, trying to proofread, trying to have it viewed from different sources, and trying to, basically make sure that no issue slips in and everything is functional and all that. And because of that, we kind of added around 2 or 3 more months on top of it. So realistically, I think that such a project can be achieved in, say, 7, 8, 9 months if you can set aside at least 1 hour to do so. And yeah, it's quite hard to, to balance your, the day-to-day job, and to also be able to focus on the book and write, and at the same time also try to maintain, some sort of social life and be able to do something else. I do kind of, I want to be honest and say that probably because of the amount of projects and mostly the book, I would say, the social life wasn't the best for the past year because of that. And I'm hoping to, improve that from now on. But, whoever is kind of wondering of trying to do something like that, like a book or ebook, whatever you have in mind, my advice is that you can do it, and it's not something that you have to do full time. It's not something that you have to be afraid of. I think it just takes a lot of courage. Just setting aside 1 hour a day, being organized and trying to stick to it, I think that's the most important part.
I think that makes total sense because I feel like discipline would be very important too. Like being disciplined to how everything would work. Nice. Thank you very much, Matt.
Yeah, awesome. I want to dive into a bit more about the book itself. I see on the listing and description that it is targeted to more beginner to intermediate levels. How did you make sure that you tailored the content appropriately for your specified audience?
Yeah, this is a this is Matt. This is a good question. To be honest, in terms of the target audience, when we kind of started this project, we had in mind all of the libraries and technologies that we want to cover in the book. Mostly because all of these topics that you can see maybe in preface or in the index of the book, they are they have been chosen by the community. It's not something that we kind of thought about and we said, oh, we're gonna do this. We're gonna try to explain a thing pose or model or whatever. All of these points basically requested by the community, and we just tried to include most of them as much as we could in terms of demand and request. And in terms of the actual target audience, I feel like this book kind of one side requires you to know a bit of Conan and Andrew, because we are not going to be covering basic things like what's the life cycle of an activity, for example, or fragment. We can't expect you to know that. And also for Kotlin, you need to be able to write some code in Kotlin and try to see if you can use a lambda function function parameter. So these kind of things which are probably not advanced. I would say that these things are something that somebody that just started on Android should be able to at least have an idea upon. The book targets people that have been doing a bit of Android for the past few months, maybe even years, and want to basically level up their skills in the sense that maybe they want to try to work with the latest technologies, because that's what the book is about, is trying to work with, understand how libraries work and work with them, and basically try to get up to date with how the how these kind of libraries have evolved over time. And from my perspective, if you know a bit of Android and Kotlin, I think that this book is for you. If you're a junior or a mid developer and you kind of want to get back on the saddle and want to explore these technologies and you haven't worked with them, and you have this drive and desire to understand how you can use them in a real project and try to code along with the book, I think that this could be a very good book for you, very good source of content. If, however, you're a senior developer that has been working with this, probably the book is not the best thing for you. However, I would say that I try to also include some concepts that not really advanced, but they are interesting concepts, like for example, recovering from the system initiated process dev, who's these kind of things. I haven't really seen them in even in senior developers, right? So I think there are a lot of valuable nuggets even for somebody that's more experienced.
Awesome. Super cool. I like that you've covered, a little bit and maybe like help people get introduced to some of these more advanced topics. It gives them a launch point into furthering their knowledge after the book, which is really great. All right. Madonna, if you are getting any DMs, please let me know. But I'm just going to go through with some other questions that I have. So, Catalin, usually in a project such as this, there's a chapter or, a piece of the work that gets a little bit more love than others because it's something you kind of care about more. Which of the chapters was your favorite to work on that you gave that little bit of extra, effort?
Yeah, this is a very good question. Actually, I often wondered. I mean, I've written this book, right? It has 12 chapters. Which of these chapters is my favorite? I think this is one of the toughest questions that I could be answering, because I kind of liked each and every one of them, because I've tried to put a lot of effort and time into them. However, going from compose, which again I love a lot, to explain, even things like the paradigm shift and kind of even the theoretical aspects, but going into more practical ones, even having this kind of cool, chapters like compose or presentation patterns or dependency injection, which again I also love about. I think that the most the chapter that I would pick as a favorite, and I kind of put a lot of love into it, is actually the last chapter, which is about exploring the lifecycle components. And even though I mentioned that you should be able to at least know the lifecycle of activity to kind of follow some things within the book, I think that this chapter I really enjoy, basically because it kind of goes into understanding how life cycle components work, and you kind of proceed with understanding how the model works behind the scenes and how the live data is life cycle aware as well, and you kind of get this kind of background understanding of how these libraries work. And the reason why I think this chapter is awesome is because I've been holding interviews, to be more correct, for the past 2 or 3 years at my previous company. And if there is one pattern that I noticed, developers tend to use libraries or technologies or tools, but sometimes, some of them, they don't really understand why they're using them, and especially how those tools and technologies, work behind the scenes. And the case for the view model and the live data, this has, a lot of even senior developers, they didn't really know how those components are actually lifecycle aware, or they didn't even know that they are, lifecycle aware. So I think that because I was able to go a bit into source code of the ViewModel and live data, not too much to scare anyone, but kind of got to understand how these things are lifecycle aware, and then how you can create your own lifecycle aware component. I think that this chapter was one of the most loved ones, I guess.
That's awesome. It's really, really cool. Thanks for that explanation. So just want to reiterate for anyone here, if you have any questions, please come up and speak. Or if you don't want to speak today, just send a DM or a tweet or anything to me or Madonna, and we can ask for you. I did get a question in a DM while you were giving that explanation, Catalin, and it is kind of for everyone, but feel free to answer first. What is your impression of Jetpack Compose at this point in time?
Yeah, I think that this question is usually, asked a lot. And I think that my answer to this question is that, I explained how Compose works and how you can, use it to define your UI layer in Android rather than, going for the XML or the Android, old new system. I think that this answers the question even better. I think that right now we are in a tipping point. I think that we've for some while, obviously since Compose was launched. I think that the natural answer is that Compose should be in our UI there. Obviously, there are going to be people that still favor that XML based view system. I have nothing against that. I think that's also the choice. But from productivity perspective, I think that Compose can help you, get up and running much faster on Android, building by and have this kind of, unified experience in Kotlin. I think that, I'm not going to go too much rambling about this. I could probably do this all day. The chapter about Compose is pretty big, and we kind of go into a lot of details and differences between the view system and Compose. But, long story short, I think that Compose is something that you should check out. And the main difference of this book, as opposed to other maybe tech books, that, the UI layer is built with Compose as kind of build apps, and everything is explained as opposed to what was happening in the system. And if you want to if you want to actually check out the book, and you have those out, I think that it's best to pick up that how did UI they built with Compose.
Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely a very common question in the industry right now is, should we learn Compose, should we use Compose? But it is chapter one in the book according to the listing that I'm seeing. So if you're interested in getting some questions or, some of your questions answered about Compose, definitely check that out. Looks like we have Angel coming up to speak, so I will just add him. But in the meantime, Madonna, do you have anything for us?
Hey, thank you, Madonna. No, I just had a question. Catalin, do you think the book that you wrote would be a good starting point for someone that is an experienced developer that maybe does Java and just wants to dive into Android development?
So, this is a good question because I reckon, some developers might still be using Java. I'm still in some legacy project. I need to also interact with Java, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if you're interested in coming into Kotlin, to be honest, this book doesn't, teach you how to use Kotlin. It doesn't really go into the semantics of the programming language. So it kind of expects that you know the basics of Kotlin. That being said, being an experienced programmer with Java, I don't think that you will have a lot of issues transitioning, you know, from Java to Kotlin. You might need maybe a few times trying to, you know, to adapt some of the logic, but you know, if you kind of grasp a bit basics, and usually this is done pretty far in a very, you know, short amount of time, I think that this book, you know, could still be of a great help to you. So, you know, for example, when I transitioned from Java to Kotlin, I felt that it was quite natural. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't too much friction. There are a few things which are different. There are a few, you know, catches that you need to be on the lookout for. But given that you explore a bit Kotlin maybe for a few days and kind of try to write in code with it, then I think that the book, you know, you could take the book and, you know, understand everything that's inside of it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for coming up, Bongo. Next up, we have Niraj.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Katalin. I have followed your Jetpack Compose startup course, and I found it very informative. And I am at my workplace also trying to use it in my work. And while reading its documentation, I found that it is having a unidirectional data flow. So how, what do you think, like how it is fitting in the MVVM architecture? Does the book cover this topic?
Thank you, Niraj, for the great question. I'm going to start off with, you know, being trying to be as thankful as possible for also taking the course on Compose. As opposed to, you know, to the Udemy course, which is more like you know, geared towards you know, just writing code. Even though the book is very practical, and I will cover this in a second. Even though that happens, the book also kind of goes a bit more into let's say for like theoretical aspects. So trying to understand how unidirectional flow of data works, how, you know, how data is passed down, and how callbacks are passed to the caller or even to the viewer usually. So I think that in terms of, you know, if you're trying to understand how UDF works, I think that the book, you know, has a good section. It actually has, you know, a section in the first chapter just about that, which focuses on that. And most importantly, in the context of MVVM, we have the book has a dedicated chapter to, you know, to presentation patterns. This kind of goes into trying to see how MVVM VC and MVVM have been implemented in the Android world until now. And then obviously it goes into actually implementing MVVM or, you know, incorporating MVVM in an existing application. And I think because of that, you know, you should be able to grasp this concept a bit better. So, yeah, I think from this perspective, you should be covered.
Thanks. That answers it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks for coming up and asking a question. I do have another question that I received in the DM for you, Catalin, and it is about the upcoming Jetpack Compose updates. Do you have any plans to update the book with some of the upcoming changes that are expected?
Yeah, this is a good question. To be honest, right now I don't really have an answer. Obviously, my, you know, my desire is to keep the code as updated as possible, and you know, try to have everything in the GitHub repository as up to date. However, probably, you know, in the next version of the book, we will be able to actually update anything in terms of, you know, breaking syntax and things like that. So even though, you know, maybe we will try to keep the code as much as possible to date, if things, you know, will change, then probably those changes will be reflected in the next version. So our plans is, you know, are basically, you know, to support, to be able to keep it up to date, because, you know, we are aware that Compose is advancing and changing rapidly. Only during the course of, you know, writing the book, we had to, you know, update the dependencies and Compose many, many times, trying to stay, you know, as much as possible up to date. So we are aware of that. Right now, we don't really have anything scheduled because, you know, the first version was now shipped. But obviously, probably this should happen, I mean, in an upcoming version.
Awesome. Madonna, anything on your side?
Would you mind, Madonna, to come again with the question? I can hear that very well. Yeah, now I got it. Yeah, so again, navigation is, you know, an essential topic within the book, and actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the fifth chapter. We kind of use Jetpack navigation in the context of compose based UI. So yeah, we obviously tackle that part. We even, you know, go a bit into deep links and basically how we can, you know, navigate between compose based screens and have some sort of, you know, multi-screen application. So that's definitely covered.
All right, yeah, I've got a couple questions on my side too that are coming in. One of which is about experienced Java and Kotlin developers. Would it make sense for them to focus on Compose or the older Vue-based system?
Yeah, so again, this kind of goes into the line of the initial question of whether you should go into Compose or not. I've had, you know, we'll still get this question a long time from now. And, you know, my answer is usually that at some point you will need to go into that direction. For example, at my workplace, most of our projects are already using Compose in production. I've seen a lot of other, you know, projects and companies doing that. We have the best proof that a lot of apps, you know, like the Play Store, even Twitter, they're using Compose. So to be honest, I think that this kind of shift is something that we wanted, is something that we needed. The Android UI system has served us very well. I can't really say that I don't like it. I mean, I'm using it for some while. I'm still using it in some projects. However, there are some limitations, and, you know, there's something that we need to acknowledge. And that thing is that, you know, we have a lot of cross-platform, you know, solutions like Flutter, React Native, whatever. And then we also have the iOS, which is pushing very hard with Swift UI. Everything that I have mentioned is based on the declarative paradigm, and it obviously requires a change, you know, in how you think and build your UI. But in the end, it's clearly that you know, the UI part of the applications in the entire industry is going and kind of, you know, pushing forward towards having a declarative paradigm. So in terms of, you know, trying to take advantage as much as possible of your development time, we've seen huge productivity boosts using Compose. There are other things that, you know, can be achieved in a much simpler manner. You know, the best example is obviously the list that you can write in a few lines of code, as opposed to creating, you know, so much boilerplate code in XML. So there are a lot of examples. Obviously, that Compose is still not perfect. There are issues. It's a new technology. I don't expect it to be perfect. But answering your question, I think that at any level, even if you're actually beginning to learn Android, or if you're experienced, I would say that Compose is something that you should learn, mostly because you'll have a lot of fun. So,
yeah, just to add a little bit, I think it depends on your team and how your app is structured too. Like, it's never going to be a bad thing to understand views, or at least for the next few years until Compose becomes a lot more widely adopted. So it's good to know the knowledge is definitely still relevant, especially as new things come out and we can see how to use and improve them. All right, so more questions coming in, but real quick, still a little quiet and a little bit of echo. Cool. So while Madonna's doing that, I have another question. So is this book exclusively describing the standard Compose components, or does it refer to third-party libraries as well for things like navigation? So is it focused on only Jetpack, or, you know, there's a bunch of community work being done as well for Compose navigation and state management, things like that?
Yeah, so if you're referring, for example, Matt, to the accompanist library, I know that there are a lot of efforts going into that direction. However, I kind of try to steer away from it and try to focus, you know, only on the official APIs. So even though, you know, we cover the Jetpack navigation and other Jetpack libraries, and not only Jetpack libraries, this is very important to mention that the book also covers, you know, other popular libraries like Retrofit, Coroutines, Flow, and so on. So even though we kind of try to focus on, you know, this kind of standard libraries, I would honestly, I think that the all the other things from the community, for example, going from accompanist, but to, for example, Raphael's navigation library, they are great additions. To be honest, I would recommend them. I would recommend anyone to try it, because, you know, the Jetpack navigation has right now, composed navigation, I mean, has a few limitations. So these kind of things are welcomed. But to be honest, the scope of the book, I mean, was not really going into those at that time.
Awesome. So another question from the same asker. Is there a chapter dedicated on performance between Compose versus old UIs or view-based UIs, I should say?
This is a very interesting question. So you know the book actually kind of tries to focus on libraries and in terms of, you know, performance between Compose and the view-based system. I think there are a lot of discussions right now, and just try to understand the scale of the book. We wanted to cover Compose, but as Thomas has actually written an entire book about Compose, to be honest, we didn't really find space for these kind of things in the Compose chapter. So, you know, the Compose chapter tries to focus on trying to explain how things have changed in terms of the paradigm shift from you know, imperative to declarative. It tries to show how you can build the UI, how you can use some UI components. It goes into state and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't go that deep into actual performance, even though it's definitely an interesting topic, I would say.
Yeah, I want to make a clarification too, because I made the same mistake, that this book is focused on all of Jetpack, not just Compose. There is a section on Compose, but it focuses on other things like the architecture components and navigation and the various things that Jetpack or that Compose itself helps you with. Or sorry, that Jetpack helps you with. See, I did it again.
No, yeah, sure, Matt. So, no, you're totally right. So, the book isn't only about Compose. It's basically focusing on a lot of Jetpack libraries, going from Compose to View Model to, you know, to Jetpack Navigation to Room for persistence. We're also going to dependency injection with Hilt, right? And we're covering pagination, right? Jetpack paging, and also, as I mentioned initially, Jetpack lifecycle components. And not only those, but we also go into other things like, as I said, retrofit coroutines, flow, you know, UI and unit tests, as well as, you know, some bits of presentation patterns, VVM, clean architecture. So we kind of try to cover a very broad spectrum in a quite a small number of pages. Even you might say 500 is a lot. To be frank, I think that if I have had the time and effort and basically the scope of the project would have allowed me, I have probably needed like 1,000 or 1,500 or something number of pages. So kind of try to tackle the most hot and kind of requested and demanded topics in Android, starting with Jetpack. And I would like to make one very important mention, because a lot of people have asked me this, and I'm sure that this is on the minds of a lot of people that are looking into this book. A lot of developers, when they try to get into this kind of getting a resource, like a book or a tutorial, whatever it is, they're very interested into not only reading things, but actually trying to practice those things. It's very important to mention that a huge effort of this project, of this book, was to make all of these chapters, you know, hands-on. So this is more like a hands-on experience. From chapter 1 to chapter 10, you're basically building up side by side with me. And in each chapter, we're adding a new technology based on the needs that we see in the project. So kind of build UI with Jetpack Compose, and we kind of understand that we need to hoist state, and we kind of need a view model, right? And we kind of understand why do we need it, how we can implement it. And then we kind of move on to retrofit, because we realize obviously that we need real data with the app. So we kind of go into that. We use callbacks. We use the basic API usage of retrofit, and we understand that maybe we can do something better and add coroutines. And this kind of goes on, and in every chapter we kind of find a problem or something that's missing, and we find the right tool to help us with. And I think this is very essential, because it kind of provides the reader with a practical hands-on experience, because in each chapter, I think that more than 60 or 70% of the chapter is with code and steps and kind of implementing and explaining and kind of bringing a project from scratch, because you, In the first chapter, we just open Android Studio and we say new project. And then by the end of chapter 10, we have a project that has basically everything from, you know, having a few screens, having navigation, having assistant, having an architecture, having UI. So a lot of things are happening. And all of these things are in each chapter, we kind of try to tackle new technology, to tackle a new issue. We understand how it works. So, yeah, I just wanted to make this mention that, you know, from the perspective of the book, this was quite difficult to achieve because each chapter had to have some each chapter depended on the previous one. So we had to find things that kind of introduced the next topic. But because of that, I think it's a very attractive proposition because you kind of get into building an app on your own with the explanations and the help of the book. And, you know, very importantly, we also have assignments, things that you can, you know, take on your own and try to be independent and learn this kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a great book. So one other question right before we jump into something special. Is there any coverage of material design with Compose or in general material design of a UI?
Yeah, this is again something that you requested. However, we didn't really find scope for it. To be honest, I think that if you're, you know, kind of interested into kind of understanding this better and having the ability to work with material, I'm going to be, you know, I can say that probably Thomas' book on Jetpack Compose is a better choice if you're really interested into that because, you know, that whole book is dedicated to Compose and I'm sure that he has other things, you know, related to material.
Awesome. Raphael, I see that you want to come up and speak. Oh, maybe not. Just disappeared. But yeah, so right now we're going to do something special. I'm going to ask a question and then post a tweet. So we have a giveaway for Catalin's book. We have a couple copies, couple hard copies and a few ebook copies. So to enter, we will just want to know, Catalin, what is your favorite Jetpack library?
Just to start off, I think to be honest, I'm gonna go with Compose because I think that, you know, out of all the Jetpack libraries, I mean, all of them kind of have something unique, but Compose is something that really, I mean, at least from my perspective, has changed the game, allowed us, you know, Android to finally be on top of the game and not only have iOS with Swift UI. Right? So yeah, from my side, I think it's going to be Compose.
Amazing. I'm going to pin a tweet to the space right here. If you want to just respond with your favorite Jetpack Compose library, that is how you can enter. And then later this weekend or maybe early next week, we will follow up with the winners of the giveaway. Yeah, thanks everyone again for being here. Super happy that you all chose to spend time with us on a Friday. We can now hear from Raphael. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. First of all, just want to thank you, Catalin, for mentioning my library. And yeah, I have two part question. One is more serious, one is more, I guess, jokey. But yeah, the serious one is, does your book cover testing?
Yeah, so thanks, Raphael, for taking up the mic. And yeah, obviously, how could I have not, you know, mentioned your library? So if you're using Compose application, you need to check Raphael's library on Compose destinations. You need to correct me if I got this wrong, Raphael. But it's I think it's awesome. I'm actually really proud of Raphael to come up with such an awesome library. And it's not only me. I think the community is very happy to have such a contribution. I think you just surpassed to more than 1,000 stars, which is awesome. Congrats on that. So yeah, go check it out because it's something that, you know, you should definitely have in mind. Answer your question, well, I think this question was on the mind of a lot of people. We kind of tried to find the actual, you know, curriculum or index of the book. We currently have a chapter for tests, and we're not only covering UI tests with Compose, but also unit tests. And we kind of try to understand how we can effectively test our code. And even though, you know, the chapter is not going to go into extreme testing techniques like TDD or anything, I think it provides a good start as opposed to, you know, I mean, I guess that whole chapter in the book allow you to be like a starting point. So the book is not like a Bible or something. You won't become a senior Android engineer after you read it, but it's going to give you a great foundation to start with. That's why, I mean, hence the name with Kickstart for the Android, because, you know, this is basically the whole point of the book, to give you a starting point, a solid foundation that you can, you know, expand on. And just as a quick mention, I'm going to leave you, Rafael, to shoot the second question. As I mentioned, I think the progenitor, or the one that actually came up with this great book title, is none else than Daniel Bowles, which I can see here that, you know, he's listening to us, and hopefully a bit later on he can take the mic and tell us how it was to review the entire book, because Daniel was our reviewer, and I'm really glad to have him here, and I need to thank him for all the great effort. So yeah, let's first circle to Rafael's second question. Thanks a lot for the great question, Rafael.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for the answer. And that's great that your book gives a start foundation, a solid foundation for all the guys starting out, and even someone more experienced, I'm sure you will take a lot of things from the book. The second question was, how angry was your girlfriend when you were finishing the book?
So
on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, I think she was quite angry. Well, you know, I wasn't able to have any kind of social activity during writing the book. And when we finished this book, I can say that she was, I think, 10 out of 10 of happiness. And as I said, the social life has taken a hit. And, you know, when you kind of embark in such a project, you need to expect that some things you won't be able to attend that much. So, yes, this is an awesome question. She's she's actually beside me. She's laughing very, very, very loudly, Rafael. I don't know if you guys can hear her, but you just made her very happy with this question.
Great, great. Yes, thank you for letting me speak. And awesome, awesome book. I'm eager to read it.
Yeah, thanks for coming up. Maybe we'll have you on in a future episode if you want to talk about your library.
Oh God, please no.
All right, well, yeah, we'll see if that can happen. But I know Madonna has a short announcement, and then she might have to become more of a listener. So hand off to you, Madonna.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's my son's graduation today, kindergarten. So I have an announcement, and that is Women Who Code Mobile will be having a summit this July, 12 p.m. through 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Please, everyone is welcome to join. And if you have any questions or you want to give a talk, please ping Sierra. She's here. She's here today. And this is all for the community. So please, that's why I'm promoting it, because it's part of our community too. So please, if you have any question about the summit, ping Sierra. Everybody is welcome. And I'm very happy that everybody joins us, mostly on Fridays. I don't take it for granted myself, and I know Matt doesn't. We appreciate you all very much. Thank you. That's all, Matt. I'm going to be listening in as I drive to my kids' graduation.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you again, everyone, for being here. We can't do this without all of you. We have a couple more questions, I think, or maybe all these notifications are just for giveaway. I think it's mostly just giveaway, which is amazing. Glad that everyone can be here. Hopefully we can get you some books. Another question actually that did come in was, I think, from Madonna, but since she has to start driving, I will ask for her, and it's more about the book writing process. Can you kind of walk us through your process, Catalin? Did you just like open up, you know, Google document or something and start writing away, or what kind of software did you use? You know, how did you organize everything? And anything that you can tell us.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. This is an interesting question, a very good one. To be honest, I didn't really know how to proceed with this kind of flow, and I was very lucky by just having the people and the team at Pact guiding me through on how to kind of organize this process. And they were kind enough to provide templates. They were kind enough to provide, you know, ways of advancing and having technical editorial feedback, and there were a lot of you know processes, and to be honest, it was quite overwhelming for me, because, you know, having to write a chapter and then having it go through 1, 2, 3, or 4, even 5, 6 And even more than that, steps of just refinement, it was quite difficult. I didn't really expect it to be that complicated. But in the end, I'm just hoping that it was worth it. Now, in terms of, what I tried to come up with was, apart from what I mentioned in terms of having 1 or 2 hours every day, what I basically did was, I tried to come up with some sort of roadmap and I kind of tried to have in each chapter some highlights. And basically when you have, just as in programming, right, you have a topic on an issue, something you want to develop a feature. So you kind of come up with the idea, I want to explain, compose, right? I don't know. And then you kind of start splitting it into sections and you kind of try to see, okay, I need to explain something about, for example, the difference in paradigms, right? How things are different. I want to explain unidirectional flow. And then I need to have a section which is, practical. So you kind of try to split something which is big into smaller pieces. I think that we all do that at our job, just to be able, to finish something and to have this kind of sensation of, I finished this part, I'm going to move on to the next one. I think this is really important, taking something big, breaking it, and then having kind of actionable steps on how to achieve each part of a chapter. If you kind of take it, small steps, it's just going to be much easier than, just trying to open a document and I'm going to write this entire book. That's not how it works. So you need to be very organized. You have probably a document or a document even for each section, to have some drafts and then to, to couple all of these things together to get a nice product. So there is no really hard rule for this. I think that the most important one is to be consistent and very organized, because it can get very messy when you have hundreds of pages, just lying around and having all these kind of things. You need to be very, very well organized.
Awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to start. So it's cool that they give you some templates. It's cool that they help you with the whole process. That's really awesome. And congratulations on getting it done. Great. Anyone else who wants to come up and speak, please do. We're approaching the hour mark, so I don't know how much longer we are going to stay in this, but if anyone has questions, we can continue to talk about the book, talk about Android in general, anything you want to ask. But yeah, thanks for being here on a Friday. I guess another one, is there anything that you've hidden in the book, Catalin, like any Easter eggs?
I didn't really think that far. I think that the only Easter eggs are the assignments that you need to, to take upon yourself and try to come up with a solution, because not all of them are going to be 100% straightforward. For example, there was a reader that kind of approached me and he said that, he just can't get one of the assignments done. And we kind of worked that through together, and I was able to showcase that to him. So I think that, apart from those, little surprises that you can opt in or opt out, I don't think I've hidden anything. So yeah.
Awesome. Cool. So yeah, I guess it also sounds like if you have any questions about the book, feel free to reach out to Catalin. Is that something that, you're open to?
Yeah, I think, I kind of got used to doing that since I had my Udemy courses, because there are a lot of, students asking questions. And to be honest, there were a lot of times in which, students kind of got me into thinking that, they kind of asked the right questions and things that I didn't even think of. So I'm obviously open to that. Every time, somebody tweets about something about my book, trying to get it, or, they even got it or so, I always kind of respond and say, hey, if you just have any question, if you have any issue, just ping me and I'll just try to, to help you as soon as possible. Because, writing a book is not only just having the content printed out. It's, that book is more like a journey, an experience. You need to build a project. So I'm expecting developers to have issues. I'm expecting things to not go, 100% as expected. So I'm going to try to be there for anyone that needs help, obviously, as much as I can and I have time. But I think that the main question is if you need anything, just DM me and I'm going to try to get back to you and see how we can fix that.
Amazing. All right. Madonna just sent me another question that she got in a DM. So this person says, "Hello, Catalin. I love what you are doing for the community and people who want to join the Android community in the future. What is your advice for someone who is relatively new in Android development and specifically with Kotlin, who wants to be an active contributor and wants to write a book or blog post or other content to help give back to the community?"
Yes, this is a very interesting question, and I actually had I went on an interview with Coding in Flow. So Florian, most of you, you should know him. And this kind of question is pretty much, you know, a standard question, and I think it's a very, very good question, and it's something that, you know, most of us think of. And to be honest, I think that the key to this is to don't fall for the, you know, for the imposter syndrome. I guess that we all have this kind of feeling sometimes. We all feel that, you know, we aren't really where we kind of know things. We sometimes we think that other developers are much smarter, or and that's maybe the reason that why we can't contribute. Just to be really, really honest with you, I think that you need to be you know, to take an action, and, you know, say, even though I just started learning, the best way in which you can learn something is by teaching others. I'm not the one that said that initially. A lot of people much smarter than me have said that, but to be honest, at least in my case, it has been like that, because whenever I try to explain something to somebody, or to try to, you know, to write an article, I kind of got into the mindset of, you know, I need to explain that to somebody that doesn't really know how that works. So I'm going to need to see what questions I should be asking myself so I can then answer them. And when you kind of do that, you start internalizing and understanding things much better. So I think that the best advice for somebody that's starting out is, don't shy away from doing any kind of small contribution. You can just write a GitHub repository that you have just, you know, you learned something, right? And then you put it on GitHub, and that's a contribution. So maybe somebody's going to need that. And my advice here is, if you do that, try to document it. It helps a lot, and kind of helps you gain some traction, even though maybe the project is not something as complex as a library. And kudos to Rafael, because he had done something extraordinary there. So to be honest, I think that the best thing that you can do is write a small article. Just start it. Just don't shy away from it. It's not something that is going to hurt. I think it's something that's going to help you a lot, because you will be able to understand things much better. And as a last note, for example, when I started, you know, writing this book, it's not like I knew all of these libraries and APIs on top of my head, and I just, you know, print them out on the book. There were things that, you know, as I went through, I also learned things. So I think that this is the best lesson. If you want to get better at something, try to teach it, try to write an article, try to push a GitHub repository, try to write an ebook, try to write a book. Don't shy away from the challenge, because I don't think that it's any harm in it. I think that you have only things to learn from that.
Awesome. I could not agree more, and very well said. That kind of gets us to my next question also. So when it comes to open source, how do you find a good open source project that you want to contribute to? And do you have any recommendations for someone who has never contributed to a project on how to do that?
Yeah, so I can't really say of myself that I'm a huge contributor. I didn't really have a chance to contribute to a lot of projects. But when that happened, I think that, you know, I didn't really go into the route of trying to find the project and trying to fix it, even though I think that this route is very valid. Just trying to find a library that, you know, enjoy, and then see if you can improve something. If that library is in something deprecated, or maybe, you know, I always say that if you don't have a library, can search for some samples. There are a lot of samples on GitHub, and those are open source contributions as well. So if you go into that sample and you see that it's using something that maybe can be updated, I'm just saying, if you see something like the Kotlin synthetics and you say, you know what, I'm just going to replace that with uBunny, because, you know, that's the thing right now. We don't want to use deprecated, you know, things or things like that. I think that this route is a very valid point. You just look into things and say, okay, what can I improve here? And, you know, just be careful that usually some repository have some, you know, some contributing guidelines. So you can't just, you know, fork it and then open a PR and it's just going to be fine. usually people for libraries and samples, they have some guidelines that you need to stick to. Don't be afraid of that. I don't think that those things are, you know, very difficult to follow. This is one path that I would recommend. But something that at least happened to me is, I was working on some projects, building some things, creating some features, and at some point I needed something, right? This was, for example, an example from some year ago, I think, when I had some sort of hardware sensors that were kind of delivering some information from different hardware APIs. And the thing is that those APIs are returning callbacks. You know, that's how it usually is. Not all APIs are going to return live data or a flow or suspend action from coroutines. Usually, all APIs are going to return callbacks. So I wanted to transform that into a reactive stream. And I was, at that time, Java was really hot, and everybody was using it and things like that. So the problem was that I found a library that was basically converting the output of some hardware sensors to RxJava stream. But that library was only doing that for one sensor, right? And in my use, I needed multiple sensors because I was trying to aggregate multiple information from different sensors and to a result. So that wasn't helping me. I wanted a flow or RxJava flow reactive stream that kind of fed me with everything that I needed. So what was I to do? Right? I mean, I just went in that library, I forked it, and I added just a simple generalization abstraction for not one sensor, but for more sensors, n sensors, how many you need. And it wasn't a huge contribution. I mean, it was something pretty simple, if you ask me. But it was something that, for example, other people were requesting. So I'm sure that even though it helped me, I'm sure that at least one person, because it was an issue that was open there, was helped by that contribution. So the bottom line is, if you kind of face issues and find libraries of both things, they're not really aligned to your needs, you can always have this chance of contributing and kind of, because you know the issue at hand, you're familiar with what you're trying to achieve, it will be easier for you to go into that library and, adapt it or, contribute to it. So these two things I would recommend for anyone just, starting out on contributing.
Awesome. So kind of just to summarize, look for some of the things that you use, look for some problems that you might need to solve or something that you would directly benefit from, and maybe someone else would benefit from it as well. Awesome. Sounds good. I'm still getting a couple questions. So let's see. This one is, hello, Catalin. Would you say that in comparison to native mobile development and cross-platform development, they have a friend who is discouraging others from native Android development to do cross-platform instead? Do you have any thoughts on cross-platform versus native Android development?
Yeah, this is thanks, Matt, for the great question, and also to the listener that asked this. I think that this kind of question was asked, and it still keeps popping up. And because we have valid solutions like Flutter, we have valid solutions, even React Native. In parentheses, I don't really like it, but we have good solutions for cross platforms. So there are companies that, instead of investing into two native development teams, they're just pushing away with Flutter, for example. So naturally, the question arises: should I focus on Android or should I focus on cross platform? Because it's exciting, right? You have one code base almost, right? And you basically can be both an Android and an iOS developer. So to anyone asking this kind of question, I think that the answer lies mostly on two parts, right? First of all, what do you want to do, right? Because if you want to become like a hardcore Android developer or native developer, maybe it's better that you focus on one, at least in the beginning, right? Until you get the hang of it. However, if you want to be like a more flexible developer, you can go with cross-platform solutions. However, there is one thing that you need to be careful and you need to watch out, because a lot of mobile solutions can be implemented on Android, but not all of these can be implemented that easily on Flutter. So, usually Flutter or other cross-platform solutions are used for straightforward apps, MVP apps, so things that, don't go into a lot of that don't really need a lot of complex native APIs, and you know they are more like streamlined applications that don't do very complex tasks. So if you're going into a company that does that, then obviously it makes sense for you to learn Flutter. Just go with it, right? But if you're going into a company that does applications that are that are more towards, let's say, the Android system, for example, you're going to a company that builds a wallpaper or a lock screen or I don't know anything that's probably a bit more closer to the native experience, then probably it's a better idea to go with Android. So it really depends on your tastes, and it also depends on what the company needs from you and where you're trying to go to, right? So I think it's a mix of both, and this also applies to your projects, right? So if you want to do something which is on both sides of the spectrum, that you probably need a Flutter just to advance more quickly. But there's no silver bullet here. There's no one going to be telling you that Android is better than Flutter or cross-platform solutions or vice versa. So there's no such thing as that. So I think you should just follow your gut. If somebody requested you to go in a project on Flutter, I don't think it's a thing. I think it's awesome because you get the chance to learn something else. So yeah, it's up to you, to be honest.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that was really well said. I think the fact that if you need to use more native APIs and do more things that a device allows you to is such a good point. Otherwise, a cross-platform solution for, a mostly consumer application is great. It really depends on the use case, and you need to just evaluate what you're going to need as a part of the product. So great explanation. Thank you for that. Let's see. I don't see any more questions coming in, and we are a bit over an hour. So unless anyone has anything else, we can start wrapping up. And just want to say thanks again, Catalin, for coming out and joining us. Congrats on the book launch, and I hope it helps a lot of people.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a great honor. I'm really glad that we got the chance to talk, and it was an awesome, awesome discussion. Thank you for anyone that has been addressing, everybody that has been addressing all of these interesting and very good questions. And finally, I also want to note everybody that has been here with us. A lot of familiar faces from Raphael to Anna to Joe to Ed. To Ahmed, a lot of familiar faces. Sorry for not being able to meet all of you, but I'm really, really happy to see you here. It goes a long way to be able to see you here, and I'm really glad that you were able to join. And yeah, finally, thank you. I would also like to thank Daniel and also Thomas, because they were a great help during this process. And supportively also Anna, my fiance. So yeah, I'm gonna wrap this up. Sorry for talking so much. It's just something that I enjoyed about, Android and everything like that. So thanks a lot, Matt, for having me here. Thanks, Madonna, and have a good weekend, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And I appreciate you talking so much. It makes my job a lot easier. So, yeah, thanks, everyone, for joining us on a Friday. Look for a message from either me or Madonna about giveaway stuff. And I hope everyone has a great weekend.
See ya. Bye-bye.